And before we get to Sunday standards, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to name this, Richard Lindbergh's latest book, Tales of Forgotten Chicago. That is my book of this week. I've started doing this year, a book of the week and a song of the week. You'll hear the song later. There is so much in this book, Richard. We've already taken the measure of the Beatles at the Stockyard, the O'Leary family. You've got how Richard J. Daley resurrected the St. Patrick's Day Parade, if you want to be timely here. The birth of the one thing that's very enlightening that I think people, no matter how much they think they know Chicago, will get a real kick out is the chapter on the Chicago flag. Those people who still love baseball will be about Wrigley Field before the Cubs. But I want to talk, in the 10 minutes or so I have you left with you, two of the great people in this book are Ann Burke, who finishes up the book. Ann Burke, who's Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court and married to a guy named Ed Burke. You give her her due here, Richard, don't you?
Well, she certainly deserves it. I mean,
yes, and she doesn't always get it. And, well, we'll talk about that after you describe why she has a chapter all her own.
Well, for many years, her invention of the Special Olympics, her conception of something that would be of great benefit to intellectually challenged children, much of the lion's share credit for that has gone to the Kennedys in Massachusetts. Ethel Kennedy provided a lot of money to get the Special Olympics going in 1968, the big event in Soldier Field that was a in my mind, one of the great moments in sports history that nobody saw. I mean, the entire Soldier Field was literally empty except for the participants and their families. But Kennedy money paid for that, and the Kennedy family kind of appropriated the credit for the thing. And Ann was kind of swept off to the sidelines on it. But it took a number of years before that situation was remedied, and I think that Ann deserves rightful credit for being the person who invented the Special Olympics, which has benefited millions of people across the world.
Yeah, it is literally, you are so right to say that is one of the great events to ever launch in Chicago.
I ended the book on that high note. I know Ann, and she's a very modest, self-effacing person, and she has such a care and compassion for a fellow man, and that was kind of my tribute to her.
And she was a young school teacher who got this idea, and, you know, I'm not going to say the Kennedy family purposely steamrolled her, but they knew how to work the public relations machines of this country, and you're right, she is a very self-effacing
modest. Yeah, she was 20 years old in Pullman Park working as a camp counselor.
That's right. Yeah. She didn't even start teaching school yet.
Right.
Okay, Richard Lindbergh. Elisha Gray. This is a guy who took me by complete surprise. It is one of the, none of the chapters in the book are more than a few pages, but he gets a few pages. It's a fascinating story.
This guy breaks my heart.
Me too.
He literally does. He, in my mind, is the rightful inventor of the telephone.
Yeah.
Elisha Gray was the superintendent of the Western Electric Company. He was an Ohioan who had moved to Chicago. And after the Chicago fire, he helped restore electricity and get the power stations moving. And that was something unsung on his behalf. But for a long time, he had been experimenting with the transmittal of sound. And on January the 5th, 1875, in the old Union Building at Washington Street and LaSalle, he conducted an experiment for the media when he transmitted the common chords of a 17-octave piano on a single wire to a location on Kinzie Street, east of State Street. This was the first time sound had been transferred via electricity.
Yeah.
It was called the electroharmonic telegraphy. Now, the next step for him was to come up with the ways and means of transmitting a human voice. And he managed to do that in his Highland Park laboratory. He lived in Highland Park for many, many years. But regrettably and tragically for him, he was aced out of the whole thing by Alexander Graham Bell.
Yeah.
In what clearly has the stench of a scandal attached to it. He filed for his caveat, as it was called, the speaking telephone, and it was time stamped that 2 hours after Bell had allegedly filed. But Bell was not in Washington, D.C., and the person who time stamped it, an examiner by the name of Zenas Fisk Wilbur. Now, how's that for a name?
What a name.
Yeah. Well, he interceded on Bell's behalf and likely time stamped it to benefit Bell because he was indebted to Bell's patent attorney, one Major Marcellus Bailey, owed him a lot of money. And he did it really to satisfy his debt to Bell's attorney. And he testified to this during a congressional committee meeting on Capitol Hill on May 21st, 1888. And so what do you do? The whole episode ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court, in the Morrison-Waite Court. It was decided in Bell's favor by one vote.
This story really, really it caught me off guard. I had never, ever heard that name before. How did you, without giving away your research secrets, how did you come upon that story?
I stumbled upon it.
Yeah.
Just a simple internet search. There was an article in the Tribune from 1875 that I found on microfilm, and I had buried it in my voluminous banker box files, and I thought of it, and I resurrected it, and I began digging, and I thought to myself, you know, how horrible this must have been. This guy was a noted scientist in his day.
Yeah.
He had patents for a number of different things, but he sold all his patents because he lived a pretty rich life. He and his wife, they were traveling all over the world, and they every time they spent down and became broke, he sold another patent.
Wow.
And, he died in 1901 in Massachusetts, and in his day he was prominently known. Today he is completely forgotten.
Yeah, it is.
And his house in Highland Park still stands, and it's reputed to be haunted, as I understand, but it's in the Highland Park Historical District.
And as you and I well know, it is and have been mutually confounded by the fact that so often very important things just do wind up being buried in history's dust. It may not be something like this, which seems Alexander Bell and his Graham Bell and his cronies doing some nefarious stuff, but it really, it just goes away. I find it mysterious. Perhaps it doesn't happen as often now with, you know, the internet, and where everybody thinks there's he or she is a historian. It really does take that kind of digging. You were talking earlier about going over old microfilm and what you find there. You still, Richard Lindbergh, get incredible joy out of it, do you not?
Oh, I still do. I'm doing some corporate histories right now, but what I hope to do next is to do a novel based on Chicago.
Oh, my God, that would be great. That would
my favorite time period, the Victorian era up to the Progressive era. That's really the period of history that I really fell in love with. And, as I wandered through this COVID pandemic, I thought to myself, please, dear God, take me back to 1890.
Yeah, even though they may not have had toothpaste and the greatest hygiene, at least they didn't have you didn't have to lock yourself up. Well, those of you out there who have any connection to libraries or bookstores, Richard is a fabulously, as you're hearing from this show, a fabulously entertaining speaker. And this one, we have only touched about maybe a fourth of the number of stories. Did you have to, Richard, for the nice folks at Southern Illinois University Press that have done a magnificent job in producing this with some very cool pictures in the middle, too, did you have to cut it off at 21, or was that just seemed the perfect number of
forgotten tales? Nowadays, if you submit a manuscript, generally they'll always tell you to shave off.
Of course.
I've overwritten everything I've ever done, and you have that battle with the editor. Yeah. You got to lose 2,000 words. Cut it. Because we are living in an age of budget considerations with publishing. I mean, there's very tight margins, and so, I could write maybe five of these books.
Wow.
But wow. I had to cut it off, and, you know, there's other stories that I could have included, but who knows? If it has some success, maybe I'll do a sequel. We'll see.
Yeah, I hope it does have success when, I guess we can measure success by people. You know, I know that Volumes is still open. I know that Barbara's and Macy's is still open. There are a number of bookstores that remain open, and, of course,
Well, you know what? If I could put in a plug for one of the best.
Sure.
Centuries and Sleuths up in Forest
Augie
Park.
Augie Alexie.
You know, he is probably the best of the independent bookstore owners as far as, you know, really promoting the work of the locals, you know, who don't always get reviewed, who don't always get any kind of national publicity. But all the independent bookstores, you know, they all deserve our support.
And they all will. And they're wonderful places to go, too. I mean, that's the other thing about them. You know, once you get out, just don't think to yourself, well, I need a drink. Go to a bookstore, man. Don't you need a book? It is always a delight to talk to you, Richard Lindbergh. It's an equal delight to read you. And I cannot wait until one of these days when I can see you and you can come up here and
well,
do this.
Well, that would be delightful, Rick. You know, I love the work you do and the wonderful way in which you promote Chicago authors and the work we do. And it's always very encouraging.
My heart's in it, pal. My heart's in it. Get to work on that novel. I cannot wait. I'll give you an hour on this show if I still have this show. I'll give you an hour. Promised right now. Richard, take care of yourself. Be safe and be warm, of course.
Thanks, Rick. God bless. Bye.
Bye. Since we only have a few minutes left, I will again tell you that this is my book of the week, Tales of Forgotten Chicago. You might also want to dip into my obituary that will be in Tuesday's paper of a man named Harry Mark Petrakis. He died. He was 97 years old. But he is the voice, the fiction and nonfiction, a lot of nonfiction too, the voice of the Greek-American experience, certainly in Chicago, but basically across this nation. The song of the week that I selected for you is... I wasn't even doing any research. I just kept thinking, well, I should play a song about Tom Brady. And so that my buddy in the control booth could get a prop bet off the song that Rick Kogan selects to play for Tom Brady. And I just started listening to a bunch of music, and I heard a version of Old Man River performed by, of course, from the musical Showboat, performed by William Warfield. William Warfield, a great black singer who died in Chicago. I had forgotten that. So I leave you with this, ladies and gentlemen. Brett, thank you. Krista, thank you. I'm not even going to mention the other one because of certain gambling problems that people can seek help with. Here is Old Man River.
There's an old man called Mississippi. That's the old man that I want to be. What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free?
Is Isn't this song cool? Isn't this song cool? Brett and I are doing, and Chris are experimenting now with songs and breaks and music and commercials. I'll be back, and so will this guy singing.
I get weary and sick of trying.
Yes, I get weary too, but not really sick of trying. It was great to host you guys on a Super Bowl Sunday. I will see you next Sunday. I think I have a full show, but you never know. So good night, stay warm, be healthy, be safe. Get a little drunk and you'll laugh.